Yeah, I'm really happy to introduce Jonathan L. Many of you, I think, know him already, but I got to hear him the other day for the first time, and I was very interested and would like to hear more from you, Jonathan. So please feel free to take it away for as long as you like. Once you unmute yourself.
Got it, got it, got it, got it, got it. Yeah, well, be careful what you ask for. Here we go. Okay, so my name is Jonathan, and I'm an alcoholic. The beginning was the beginning. There, he, one of the thing, one of my earliest feelings and memories was that there was something terribly wrong, and I wanted to get the fuck out of here. And I'm going back to like six. Something was wrong. Something was missing. And something was, in that I was severely dyslexic. Now, this is, 50 odd years ago, 63, I was born 63 years ago, 64 years ago. And it wasn't addressed and it didn't make sense. And the reason I bring up the dyslexia is because it really colored so many of the aspects of my life. I was able to talk very well and listened very well. So I was able to talk as if I read. I was able to lead you to believe that I had done something that I hadn't done. And I was a genius at procrastinating, and seeming like something I wasn't, and feeling dishonest. And feeling wrong and feeling broken and feeling empty as a result of all these things. The first time I had a drink at the age of 14, it was perfect. It did exactly what it was supposed to do. It made me comfortable. It made me complete. My drinking history isn't that interesting, and it's certainly not remarkable. But I was mostly a periodic drinker until the age of 25, simply because I couldn't. People who could have a drink at lunch and go back to work, that was beyond me. And, but when I was 25, I met a fella and, 3 months into the relationship, I knew the rela there was nowhere for it to go. And I knew it was over. But my brain said, yeah, but you've never been in a relationship for more than 3 months. And he wants you to stay. And how bad could it be? Why don't you have a drink and maybe it'll get better? And at that moment, I became a daily drinker just like that. The next 5 years, no surprise, were horrible and were violent and were terribly sad. And this was around 1985. I'm trying to think if there's anything worthy of the time to talk about in my drinking days, except that everybody knows how it goes. And it didn't go anywhere. The final year of that relationship was the worst. My drinking escalated. The pain was such that one night I just took a penknife and stabbed my arm because I thought, at least the pain is real and I can focus on that. I did one day leave, and I did one day. And I was going to a therapist at the time. And the therapist said, did you go out? And I said, the other night, and I said, yeah. He said, did you have much to drink? I said, no, not a lot. 12, 13 drinks, not a great deal. And he said, the motherfucker, he didn't call me an alcoholic. You know, had he called me an alcoholic, I could have thrown a chair at him. I almost did anyway. But he said, do you think you have a problem with alcohol? And I said, yeah, I have a problem. It's with your ugly face. And if I ever see it again, it'll be too soon. And I stormed out. And I couldn't get drunk that night because I was so angry. I drank everything in sight. 6 days later of not drinking out of spite to prove that I wasn't an alcoholic, I could wait till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I didn't buy the cheapest vodka. I didn't buy vodka in plastic bottles. I had a slew of reasons why I was not an alcoholic. And I didn't drink in the morning, which 8 years into sobriety, I realized that was a lie because I never counted the weekend. I didn't think they counted. Anyway. So 6 years later, 6 days, it seemed like 6 years later, I'm rocking back and forth. I have nothing. And I thought, I need a drink. I really, really need a drink. And at that moment, everything crashed. It was like, oh, fuck. I'm an alcoholic. And I thought, what? I thought, well. And this is part of what has kept me sober for all these years, this moment, which is why I bring it up. Is I thought, I have two options. I can go to AA. Now, this is 1990, July of 1990. There are no reality shows. You know, everything I knew about AA, I learned from Susan Hayward. There wasn't anything out there, really. A couple of movies here and there. Or I could drink and always feel the way I felt at that moment. And that's what I could no longer do. I had put up with this pain for so long. And I couldn't imagine doing it one moment longer. And I didn't have, I mean, suicide wasn't even an option at this point, because I'd get drunk, I'd get suicidal, and then I'd get defiant and say, I will be damned if they say that I killed myself because I got drunk. So it was this horrible, horrible thing. There was nowhere to go. So I called AA. And I got a disgruntled woman on the phone, and she told me where to go. And the meeting had changed times, and everyone was leaving. And I thought, thank God, good, great. I can go home now and have a drink. I showed up to this fucking meeting, and now leave me the goddamn fuck alone. And a guy saw me. Tony the Greek in Coitsville, New Jersey, saw me. And he came up to me, and I didn't want him to. And he said, I'm so sorry. There's another meeting tomorrow. And I thought, fuck. All right, fine. I'll go to that meeting, and then I'll drink, and then I'll be left alone. And at that meeting, there was a woman. I got there late. And she was sharing. And she said she had a pain she could no longer tolerate. And I thought, how did she know about that? And I mean, I couldn't imagine anybody knew about that. That was one of the things, you know, if you felt the way I felt, you would have to drink. And here is somebody who was doing exactly the opposite. And I didn't I didn't think it was possible. So I stayed. And I think at that meeting or the next meeting, I said, my name is Jonathan, I'm an alcoholic. And I was surprised because I'd never said anything that sounded like that before or felt like that before. I'd never said the truth before. Just the truth. So I stayed. I didn't stay to get better because I didn't think there was such a thing as better. I stayed out of curiosity because how did they know? How did you know? There was a fellow, first week, 79th Street Workshop. He says his sponsor told him not to have conversations with people who weren't in the room with him. And I thought, I've spent my whole life having conversations with people who weren't in the room with me. I spent my whole life rehearsing what I was going to say or rehashing what I should have said. And simply my incredulity kept me in the rooms. Hearing my story and my feelings coming out of other people, I had been so desperately lonely as a child, so painfully alone. And that was removed the minute I came into AA. Now, part of my story is backwards, thank you very much, as it should be, in that I came in with a very benign sense of religion, higher power, the whole concept. I was brought up in a kind of with some lovely tenants, and it was fine. I didn't question this. And also because of the way I read, which was I could read as well as I could read, and then I pushed myself through, I was able to ignore a lot of stuff in AA. I didn't understand the third step at all. I thought the second step was funny for those who had insanity to be returned to. And I just went through and got what I could get. And my awakening was not a spiritual one at all. Because all of a sudden, I even joined a church because of the work they were doing with the AIDS community, and I was involved in that. And then one day I was there, and I was listening to the actual words people were saying and reading from their literature, and I thought, oh, well, that's bullshit. And so the spiritual axiom thing the spiritual awakening, whatever it is at the back of the big book that says, you know, nothing is worse than contempt prior to investigation. Well, I had no contempt coming into AA. Well, once I started investigating, I found out what was true for me. And that has been huge. And it has been difficult in that people assumed that I was so spiritual. I don't know why, but they did. And when I said, yeah, no, I don't think so, it was hard. So I stayed and I found things out. And I did the fourth and fifth step, which were really important because I was really able to see things laid out in front of me in a way I hadn't before. For instance, I found out that it was my second thought that got me into so much shit. My first thought was often, don't stay in that relationship. Don't go home with that man. Don't have that other drink. My second thought was always, what could it hurt? I'd always talk myself out of my truth, which pointed out to me that I did have something to be returned to. My insanity was that I turned my back on what was truly right for me. When I was 15 years or so, I finally got a handle on the third step that has helped me immeasurably. Because I ignored it. I thought it was, you know, turn what over? You turn over pancakes. What are you talking about? Turn it over. So I had to go back and I had to look at it and I had to question myself. So what are you talking about when you're saying your will? What is that? And then for me, I realized that I defined my will as my limited imagination of how things should be or should have been. And then I had something to let go of. Then I had something that I could move beyond. Until that point, I didn't. But at that moment, it was like, oh, okay. And all that did was drop me right on my feet in the present moment. Because I was no longer caught up in what should or shouldn't. I was faced with what is and now what. Which has been, you know, what this journey is about. What is and now what? Oh, don't think I don't turn my back on it. Don't think I don't go running under my sheets, cowering and whimpering and thinking I'm not good enough and thinking I can't. But I can see that as the lie also. You know, the things that were true as a beginner, the things that were true in the beginning are still, I hold on to. I get through today without a drink, I fucking win. And I have possibilities I wouldn't have had otherwise. You know, my life, as a result of this, as a result of these steps, you know, I didn't have a relationship for the first 11 years because the relationships were not good for me. I got lost in them. I realized that I'd rather be lonely alone than lonely lying next to someone. And I had work to do. And 11 years in, I met a fella. After I had decided this was it, I liked being alone. And 21 years after that, I share my life. I don't live anyone else's. But I can live in the presence of someone else fully as myself. I never thought that was possible. I always thought I'd be trying to fit into some hole or peg or jig that wasn't, that this thing called me could never, and I don't, you know? I keep coming here. So in July, it'll be 33 years. And I've grown up here. You know, one of the things that happened, and I think maybe I'll end on this, was, so I always thought I was a nice guy. And I always thought I wasn't an angry man. I only dated angry men. And everything was going fine. And then I realized, oh, fuck. You know, and And I also realized, as much as I was never really in the closet, but I was always very much alone. And I realized 7 or 8 years in that I was fine being a gay man in straight meetings, because fuck you. But I wasn't okay being a gay man in gay meetings, because that's where I felt judged. That's where I felt less than. You know, I used to have to drink in order to go to bars. That's where I felt too fat or too this or too that or not this or not that. And I thought, okay, you got some growing up to do. And I went to gay meetings in AA, thank heavens for them, because I was able to get over that shit while my hand was being held in this program. And the anger, because, wow. You know, that was outrageous. And it was necessary. It was so necessary. And I can do anything these days. I can face anything. It won't kill me. I didn't know that. I know that I've been rambling, and I know that I've been all over the place, and I wish I had something more concrete to leave you all with. But as a result of not being alone, and as a result of other people's journey and witness to the fact that they could drink, they could not drink a day at a time and face the worst things. You know, I kept on looking for ways out, even in AA. And in the beginning, I remember I had a couple of months, I was going to meetings in Jersey, and I was thinking, what the fuck do these breeders know? You know, everybody is dying. They don't know shit. And a woman shared about her brother who had AIDS. And I thought, well, okay. You know, my friend's her brother. Horrible things have happened. My mother died in my arms. I was a couple of blocks away from the World Trade Center. You know, this and that, and dear friends, and all of that. And none of it has been a reason to drink. In fact, just the opposite. I was too busy living and dealing with those things and being grateful for the opportunity to be there as myself, that drinking never even crossed my mind. So, that's it. I show up. And I'm grateful for all of you for showing me how to do this. I hope I've said something useful.